Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday night, and that for me is Slap of the Bass. Means it's time for the weekend wrap, surveying the squared circle. We have a special, very special guest coming on tonight, another heavyweight champion, Mr. Chris Byrd. He's going to be joining us, but right now I'm going to get our champ And Mr. Layman Brewster for our latest segment of Chilling with the Champ. We're going to discuss some of the very exciting fights that took place earlier this weekend. So let's get this party started. And here's the champ, Mr. Layman Brewster. What's going on, my man?
Hey, man.
Got a lot of things to talk about. Got two heavyweight fights that we're going to talk about today. Of course, we're going to talk about that tremendous knockout with Mr. Charlo. And also, I see my co-host has dropped in, Mr. Jabron Clement. Jabron, how are we doing this evening, my man?
I'm doing great. Besides this snow that's falling.
Well, see, it might be a little bit out there where Layman is, too. I'm not sure. I mean, that, you know, it's only getting a little of that white powder out there in Naptown, too. So, you know, Layman, how is the weather out there where you're at?
Man, it's raining, man, so I ain't complaining. It ain't snowing, and hopefully it won't freeze. If it freezes, then I would rather have the snow, because the worst is those ice storms, man. You know, like after it rain, and then it just, everything just freezes, so everything is just smoke, just very, very slick.
I hear that, man, but we have a very special guest tonight. Someone that I've been trying to get on the Pugilist Corner for a little while now. He has also graced us on there, but not, I believe, while you've been around, Jabron. But tonight we do have Mr. Chris Byrd. When a heavyweight champ makes a request, how can I possibly resist, especially when he's right here in my town? So, Mr. Byrd, how are we doing tonight, my man?
Doing good. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no problem, man. No problem. Like I said, I've been trying to get you back on the Pugilist Corner for some time. So anytime we get an opportunity to get you on the show, we are very well pleased. And have to thank Layman for telling me about that you wanted to come on the show. I know it's a family affair, so... You know, I know when to take my place. You know what I'm saying? So, Jabron, how's it feel, man, being on the show with two heavyweight champs, man? I don't know about it. We always seem to have some problems with Jabron and his connection here. I'm not sure what's going on, gentlemen, but... let's talk about some of the action that that we saw this weekend. I know you gentlemen especially want to talk about the heavyweights, but I'm going to talk about some of the little boys first here, because I know the other two, when we talk about heavyweights, you gentlemen are much more experienced and much more qualified to talk about what happened this weekend. So let's talk about some of the little boys first. Layman, what was your opinion of the way Mr. Mares handled his opponent, Mr. Cuellar?
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you, I didn't get to watch those fights, man. I'm trying to think. My wife, we got this thing called the Fire Stick, and she was like, look, we don't never get no time to watch movies. The kids out the house, we watching a movie tonight. So I had to bow down.
Oh, hey, you know, there's always a higher power, and, you know, sometimes we don't have to look no further than across the room. So I understand, definitely understand what you're talking about. Mr. Bird, were you able to watch any of those fights this weekend?
I didn't watch the Mari fight. I seen highlights because my son had a basketball game. He played college basketball, so I was at the game, so I didn't get a chance to watch it. But I do tape the fight, so I'll be watching them a little bit later here.
Okay.
I always watch the fights later, so, and I break down fights. I just love boxing.
Well, you know, I remember, you know, from the segment that we had you on, like I said, on the Pugil's Corner, and, you know, between you and Mr. John David Jackson, I mean, you know, you guys have an eye for breaking down the fights, breaking down the opponents, and I always enjoy having you on the show. That's why if you look through your phone, you'll probably see some messages from me back and forth in there. But, Jabron, did you happen to watch any of the fights this weekend?
Oh, yeah. I caught a lot of fights. The Abner Morris fight, the Joshua fight, the Joseph Parker fight, even Chavez Jr. fight.
Let's just talk about right now the smaller guys there. What did you think about the Morris fight?
He showed a lot of grit. You know, it was a lot of doubters, a lot of people saying, you know, he's on the back end of his career. He doesn't have anything left in the tank. And I thought he showed a lot of gut and grit in that fight.
Yeah, he did make his point in that fight. I thought, you know, he had an opponent that was well suited for his style. Not sure if the fight would have been exactly that close. It might have been a draw if it had been Madison Square Garden. I got to give a little bit here for the home team, but since you brought it up, now let's talk a little bit about the New Zealand fight. We saw Mr. Parker become the first Pacific Islander to win a championship, and he is now the WBO heavyweight champ. Either of you familiar with Mr. Parker's work?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh yeah, I'm familiar with him. He's good with his feet. He's got fast hands. You know, he's a good size and good height heavyweight. I mean, perfect height because he's in between. Like he's like 6'4", so he can fight the tall guys and the shorter guys. You know, he's a talented kid.
You want to talk a little bit more about that, Layman?
Well, you know, man, not so much about him. I heard a lot about him, and I heard that he was going to be a force to be reckoned with, and that was really the first time that I've gotten to see him fight, man. So, you know, I usually don't try to make a clear judgment on a fighter until I see at least two or three of his fights to give me something to compare it to. So, yeah, I'm all in. I know that he had beat Khali Mihan, who I fought, and he had stopped Khali, and I didn't get to see that fight, but he must be pretty good to stop Khali, because Khali, to me, was a really good fighter. But, again, I think Khalid may have been a little over the hill, but I ain't making no excuses for him. But, you know, a win is a win.
Knowing the young man and seeing him, like you said, Layman, probably for the first time, do you think, you know, that this was more of a matchup in favor of Mr. Parker, especially, you know, as far as the WBO is concerned, because, I mean, you know, let's just be, you know, call a spade a spade. We have had, you know, some rather questionable decisions and championships come out of the WBO. So, I mean, you know, do you think, you know, that this is more of a publicity for the WBO rather than a genuine contender for, you know, say, you know, someone like Deontay or perhaps Joshua, you know, or do you think this is possibly a good setup for maybe someone like Mr. Ortiz, the Cuban champion? And I'll start with you there, Mr. Bird.
No, I don't think it was a setup. It was actually a great matchup of two undefeated guys. They made, you know, Joseph Parker and Anthony Joshua is, you know, basically on this collision course because he was number one contender to Anthony Joshua. So I thought they were going to fight, but he get a chance type of WBO. I guess he was number one contender there. And, you know, he's the perfect guy to win the title for WBO to challenge any one of the champions. I mean, he has a good skill set, and his opponent is not no bum. You know, undefeated. He's a big guy. He looked like he out of shape, but he come to fight. And one thing I look at in boxers, especially heavyweight, is how they go round, how many rounds they go. You know, guys, he could fight for 12 rounds, put in work, and give you a great fight. So I think, especially in this heavyweight division right now, they were the best two guys for the WBO title in the ranking. And top, you know, top 5 to 10 heavyweights in the world. I mean, from 1 to 10, they're both in that top 10 pound for pound heavyweight, you know, best heavyweight. So it was a great matchup. You can't deny that. I mean, I don't think it was a setup. You know, any one of the guys can beat any guy on any given night. I mean, there's no dominant, you know, champion right now. I mean, you look at Vladimir Klitschko reign for so long, and then Tyson Fury coming and outboxing for 12 rounds. And you see a guy like Steve Cunningham, a small heavyweight, knock down Tyson Fury and give him all he can handle in a fight. And you think, well, Vladimir's going to kill him because Steve hit him like that and knock him down. And so Vladimir hitting him, since he's much bigger, going to destroy him. But he got outboxed. And Vladimir couldn't pull the trigger like he wanted to because he didn't. It seemed like, in my opinion, that he didn't want to take a chance to get counterpunched and get you know, cracked by a big heavyweight himself. So it's a great matchup. I mean, you can't deny, you know, those two fighting each other. And I heard it was a great fight, you know, to the end. So I don't think it was a setup by WBO, in my opinion.
Jabron, do you want to give us a fan's point of view before I go to Layman?
Like Chris said, it wasn't a setup. And I don't think you were saying like a setup, like it was fixed. It's more like how they're trying to forecast for the future to align maybe Joshua and Parker to fight one another the same way how they aligned Joshua to fight this fight, and if he won the fight, then he would be in line to fight Klitschko later, in the beginning of 2017. But with that being said, it's a great thing, not for just the WBO, but it's great for boxing that we're going to have these young and up-and-coming fighters, especially he's undefeated, representing his country, on a collision course to fight one another. This is what boxing has been missing. You have guys that's taking step-aside money and fight this person and this and that, and this is what we need, and bring heavyweight back to the forefront of boxing.
Layman, your thoughts, on a possible matchup or, a possible collision course since we seem to be having all of these different speculations here. Now we have a speculation that we're going to have Klitschko and Joshua, possibly Ortiz and Mr. Parker. Layman, where does this leave Deontay?
It just, again, every time I talk, I have to just first say it's always my own opinion. I don't speak for nobody else, but I just think that Deontay is in a class of his own, just like I think Joshua's in a class of his own. And I think that if they can manage to get, like let's say Joshua gets past Vladimir, which, I honestly have to, in all honesty, I believe that Joshua is not going to have too much problems with Vladimir, because Vladimir has been off for a long time. He's an older fighter. He's a father now. I think he's felt the comfortability of, hey, for the first time in my life, I'm married. I have a child. I have more money than I can ever spend. I'm older. I'm coming off of a loss. And now I'm about to fight this young, hungry lion who I know at one point I was in shoes. I just don't think personally that Vladimir, and I could be wrong, because Vladimir is a tremendous fighter. I don't take anything from him whatsoever. But I always had a saying, out with the old, in with the new. And I just think that a guy like Joshua, with the type of skills that he's able to show, he's been showing, like, not just because he's a big fighter, not because he's a heavyweight, but because he's actually a skilled fighter, just like Deontay Wilder. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to all boil down to Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua. And I think that what the WBO did, bringing Parker along, I think that, man, you really got the heads of boxing coming together in some sense, maybe even behind closed doors, and saying, listen, if we want to revive this sport so that we can all continue to eat, this is what we need to do. So I think that putting on fights like they just had this weekend, I think that in my opinion, it kind of brings it to a head where now we're going to see the emerging of the top four or five heavyweights, And I think that you have like that kind of the kind of tournament that they had. Not tournament per se, but just, we're saying, arranging a fight to set up these fighters, these champions, to get their belts, have one or two title fights, and then fight to unify these belts. Because I think in order for boxing in the heavyweight division to stay relevant, you have to be speaking of unification, because for so long the Klitschkos had the titles and they had it in a unification, but the only problem was they were so educated about the way that they went about fighting that it turned everybody off. Nobody wanted to see the Klitschkos, even to the point where they had to go out the country to fight, and even HBO wouldn't even follow them over there, or pay-per-view, or any of those avenues like Showtime. So I just believe that everything that's happening right now is a calculated move, because as we know, MMA has taken a big it's taken a big chunk out of boxing, if you will, even though they're two totally different sports. But at the same time, with MMA, every time somebody step in the ring, you know it's going to be a fight because that's just the way it's set up. Whereas in boxing, for so many years, you had these pick fighters where the Klitschko's was picking their opponents, and then you had these promoters that didn't want their fighters to fight against this guy because he was with another promoter, and I think that that ultimately hurt the sport overall. But I think today, as I say, I think they're all starting to come together. Listen, the only way we can make this ship of boxing sail is if we all roll at the same time in the same direction. But then again, this is just me. I could be wrong. I could be off. But it just kind of looked like it because if you look at the timing that all these fighters are fighting and the way these fights are being announced, it's almost like they're all together in some type of organized way, the way that everything is coordinated. So that's just kind of my take on it, man. But I agree with Chris and Jabron. Everything they said was everything I would have said, so I ain't got to say it.
Chris, you know, I asked this question to Layman probably a few weeks ago when we were talking about a possible Joshua and Klitschko matchup. And, you know, I thought it was very important for Deontay's career that these two gentlemen, meaning Joshua and Klitschko, meet first. And the reason why I said this is because now he only has to fight one of them to get the type of recognition and, you know, that a world champion, you know, gets when he's actually fought, you know, the cream of the crop, so to speak. You know, everybody kind of criticizes Deontay's opponents and whatnot, even though he's beaten some top 10 heavyweights. My question to you is, do you think that there's a distinct advantage for Deontay for these two gentlemen to fight first before he has to really, you know, meet one of them?
Yeah, I mean, it could be possibly. I mean, when I think about boxing and when people say, well, look who he fought. He hasn't fought nobody, but look who he fought, you know. Deontay Wilder hasn't taken much damage, probably none, or Anthony Joshua, not much damage. With a fight with Klitschko, he may take some damage. And then say he fights Deontay next, you know, it's a little bit off your career, and off your performances. The more you box. And some guys get better, but some guys, it takes something out of them. So I think it could be a bad thing. You get to sit back and watch, you know, two guys fight, a guy similar to him and Vladimir Klitschko as far as height, good right hand, you know, and similar to him. You can sit back and watch and study Anthony Joshua a little bit more if Vladimir can go more rounds. Not saying he's going to get knocked out, but it just depends how he looks. So you could still break a guy down because Anthony knocked out so many guys early, you really don't know, you know, sometimes what you're really going to get. I mean, you see him in a fight where he'll go past five rounds and he looked good, or six rounds. See him in a fight with Dillon White where he looked tired in the third, fourth round. He's not even thinking in the fourth, but he looked tired in the second, third round already. So, but he's still punching hard. So with Anthony Joshua, you don't know what you're going to get with over 12 rounds because you never see him fight 12. So Deontay can sit back and just pick them apart. I'm like, okay, you guys fight each other. And if it's a hard, grueling fight, you know, maybe some damage, but I'm in a good situation. I get to fight the winner, and it'll be great. I can win the belt. But on the flip side of that, you always, as a boxer, want to say I fought, you know, the best or the big names in the division. You know what I'm saying? Him fighting Vladimir Klitschko, Deontay Wilder, fighting Vladimir Klitschko and Anthony Joshua in his time of boxing this era, it looks good. And if he beat both of them, he can say, look who I beat. I beat him and him. It's just like myself when I was a heavyweight. I always wanted to fight Mike Tyson. I knew Mike Tyson was in a different era than I was, but he still was fighting in the same era. You know what I mean? He won his title in 1988, and I won my first title in 2000. So, but he was still boxing when I was around, so I could say on my resume, I beat Mike Tyson. Just like I fought Evander Holyfield, I beat Evander Holyfield. So, you know, you wanna fight guys in there. I mean, fight guys that are famous, got big names, and to put on your resume, it looks good. And with Deontay Wilder, he's a heavy hitter. He's a great fighter. I mean, he's got progressively better with each fight. So he can sit back and watch two guys duke it out and be like, okay, I'll fight the winner. We can unify this thing. I know certain ways to beat him. That's just my opinion.
Dupron, as a fan, are you kind of disappointed now to see the belts fractured like they were, like they are now, rather than all unified in one place? I mean, you know, right now we have a WBO champ, we have a WBA, we have a WBC, we have an IBF. Just strictly speaking, from a fan's point of view, you know, do you see the unification of these belts once again anytime soon, or do you think politics is once again going to rear its ugly head?
No, I see within the next 2 to 3 years that it should be unified. It definitely should be unified because, you know, in 2 to 3 years, Klitschko will be retired. And maybe Tyson Fury will stay retired. So you have these young guys that's taking over now. They're grabbing the baton and stepping to the forefront. So eventually, I think, yeah, like 2-3 years, it should be unified and one person will be standing at the top with all the belts wrapped around their waist.
Layman, do you agree with that, or do you think you know, already you know, there's you know, little cracks that suggesting that perhaps we're going to see, you know, this thing turn political, or do you really think that you know, like Jabron and most fans are hoping that that we can unify the titles within the next couple of years?
I think it's definitely going to be unification, man. As I said to you guys earlier, I think that the powers that be in boxing, the guys in the that own these networks that control the cameras, if you will, man, the networks, I think that they have brought these guys together in some kind of way and said, listen, this is what the ratings are looking like. If you guys don't put all that political mumbo-jumbo aside, these guys fight each other, you're going to lose a whole lot more than pay-per-view and HBO. You know what I mean? It's like you're going to be trying to do some fights on YouTube because you have to give people their hard-earned money's worth. And by you having a fighter and these days, in trying to build him up like they used to build up fighters, I don't know, man, back in the 80s or even the 90s, and then let him fight against a guy that got, you know, a good record, those days are over. Today, if you look, you got young guys fighting young guys. I mean, guys at 16-0, 17-0, 12-0. Fighting each other, man, which is really kind of unheard of, but that's what we have to do, I believe, to bring the interest of people back into boxing, because if you look at the census of boxing, it had went down for a little bit because people were tired of watching these champions look good coming into a ring fighting a guy that they know that they could beat. you know, and then when they finally do fight somebody that could fight, then they don't want to fight no more. So I think, man, that today, in this era that we're in, we can't afford those mistakes. And the biggest mistake we could ever make, I believe, today is to try to let a guy get his record padded and then let him fight somebody that has a good record. I don't think we could do that, man. That's why I believe that a guy like Joshua, instead of saying his managers and people saying, well, you know, we're going to take other fights, they're saying, look, let's take Vladimir Klitschko because he's a word on it. He's a big name. That is right now Joshua's hot. It don't matter who he fight, he would still make a lot of money. But for him to be saying, okay, I will fight Vladimir, I'll fight the best there right now, you know, that's saying a lot about the where boxing is going, if you will, because these guys don't have to fight each other, which is all that they're doing. They're not saying, oh, well, whatever my management want to do. They're saying, look, I'll fight. Matter of fact, Vladimir, you come into the ring, let's make it official. You stare me down, I'll stare you down, and I'll see you in April. And I just think that that's the way that it's looking, man. You talk about the Cuban guy, Ortiz. He turned around and just fought a couple of weeks ago and just turned around and fought again last night, man. So, I mean, it's saying a lot about boxing in the direction that it's going. I think that the excitement is coming back, and it's coming back in a big way, man. And I think that with these guys, they're not going to stop at fighting one another. I think the whole goal is to try to bring the unification to say, hey, I'm the next great champ. So that's just my take on it.
Chris, I want to kind of come to you with a different direction because we've seen, you know, we've heard about the insurance thing in New York. We've seen, you know, most of our big fights, you know, they're taking place, you know, in places like the MGM Grand, Madison Square Garden, you know, even Texas. You know, when you look at the fights this weekend, we had a title fight televised coming out of USC. It wasn't out of the Forum. It wasn't out of any of the usual big venues that we see out here in California. Chris, is California making a statement to all these other states that, hey, we have plenty of venues and we're willing to bring in champs and put on great shows out here? You know, if you other states are you know, kind of stuck in the mud, you know, with old regulations or, you know, going through into different situations such as the state of New York. Do you think that, you know, right now we are already the state with probably the most combat sports given in any given year? But do you see that, you know, all of these different champs and different weight classes that are willing to come out here, do you think that, you know, California might possibly replace New York and Las Vegas as possibly the boxing mecca?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it can. I mean, it's hard to, you know, New York, you know, legendary, especially the Garden with Vegas. You know, everybody knows Vegas is the spot for boxing. You know, that's just been the history, especially with all the casinos and the gambling and all that. So, but California is hot too. It's so many fighters in L.A. I mean, just in L.A. alone. I mean, all these boxers, they don't have to go far. It's great weather, great fans, and it could be a major mecca for boxing. To me, you know, just being in L.A., when I go to L.A., to the Wild Card West, to Wild Card, to all these different gyms, I'm like, think all these fighters here. I think it's bigger than Vegas with boxing, with boxers. I mean, it's crazy. So it could be a major mecca for boxing if they put up more shows there. They have the venue. I mean, you can go in every major venue. I mean, just big arena, so it could really take over in boxing, you know, because it's a lot of boxing fans and a lot of good boxers that want to come and fight here in this, you know, in the Southern California area especially. So, and then you got Andre Ward up north, you know, in the Oakland area, and huge up there, great following. So this state could really just kill it with boxing. And like Lane was saying, it's starting to come back. We know it has faded away for a little bit, you know, the past years. But, man, with Al Haymon and the PBC boxing brought it back to life big time, and boxing could be so much bigger, and especially here, out here.
Speaking of the situation in New York, any updates, anything that you've heard about that, Jabron?
Nope, but good news. Remember I was saying they pushed it back to the beginning of the year for the gym? Gleason's gym is open, baby. I went by there 2 days ago.
Okay, well, all of that's good news, and you know, we are talking about some matches going on up there. All we can kind of do is wait and see on that. Layman, let's talk about some of your colleagues here. We have the Hall of Fame, International Boxing Hall of Fame, the class of 2017. Of course, Evander was elected his first year of eligibility. Layman, talk to us a little bit about the 2017 class.
You know something? It's funny you say that, man, because I was just thinking about that. I got a call from one of Ed Brophy's guys about the Hall of Fame, asked me if I wanted to come, and he was telling me who was going to go in. And I don't even really remember everybody he said that was going to go in, though. But he did say Evander. But who else did they say was going to go in this year, next year?
I'm looking at Barrera. It's three new. Let's see, who are they?
Isn't Barrera one of them?
Let's see. We have a Nevada judge, Jerry Roth, ring announcer, Jimmy Lennon Sr. Let's see. The late Eddie Booker, Steve Farhood, Barry Tompkins, and then for fighters,
right,
we have... we have Evander. Let's see, who else is all in here? Barrera, the Babyface Assassin, Tapia. No, not Tapia, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Tony is. Tony. Think he is going.
Yeah. Let's see. I don't have the full. Let's see what else I can find here. I'm trying to get the full list. Let's see. But I know Evander is going in. It's his first ballot. Okay, Marco Antonio Barrera and Johnny Tapia, along with the other guys that were non-combatants or non-participants. But yeah, that's it. Barrera, Tapia, and Holyfield, as far as fighters are concerned.
Oh, okay. I think it's pretty interesting, man. You know, me and Chris and James and Bo and Ray, as you know, we we have our cigar company, and we actually wanted to go to the Hall of Fame last year. And, you know, I'm actually, with that being said, I think I'm going to try to see if we can actually make it this year to go in there to, you know, to support a vendor, you know, for one. And, you know, because he was a little bit before us, but at the same time, you know, he was our gatekeeper, so to speak, you know. I think that it would be great if the five of us could show up, man. I think that would really bring out a lot of media. So I'm going to check into that because I would like to be there to see a vendor, you know, somebody that I grew up watching, you know, that I could say, oh, I have a relationship with him as well as all the other guys. But, you know, he was a favorite for me because, you know, he wasn't the biggest guy at the time when he was fighting, but he showed a lot of heart, man. And he was, in my opinion, one of the best fighters to ever lace up the gloves in the heavyweight division in history. He fought everybody.
Most definitely. Chris, your thoughts on this year's Hall of Fame inductees?
Oh, great, especially the boxers. I mean, you're talking about Marco Antonio Barrera, you know, the small weights, Johnny Tapia,
yeah.
Small weights. I mean, put on, you know, great fights, multiple champions in different weight classes and multiple titles. You know, it's a great class, you know, going with the boxer, especially Evander Holyfield, like a guy I got a chance to get in the ring with. You know, he was older, two eras before me, but at the same time, I got a chance to fight the great Evander Holyfield. So but like Layman said, he fought everybody, small heavyweight. I've had my heavyweight career after Evander Holyfield. Small guy, born again Christian, and willing to fight everybody. I was small, wasn't a natural heavyweight. We both, Vander wasn't a natural heavyweight, but willing to fight everybody. So it's a great class just going in with the boxers. And man, I tell you, they gave us great fights. I mean, I admire Marco Antonio Barrera. I mean, he's one, and Johnny Tapp. Those are my guys just growing up, and not older. I mean, not much older, just we all growing up in boxing, watching these guys fight, it's amazing to see them, and congratulations to the guys that going to the Hall of Fame. That's a major feat and accomplishment in boxing, to be in the Boxing Hall of Fame. I mean, you're amongst the great of all-time boxers. I mean, that's amazing. So, you know, congratulations to the guys, and, you know, man, I wish I could, you know, be on that stage one day. Man, that's just a great feat.
Yeah, you always hear about it. I mean, you know, there's a lot of the guys that come on here, you know, that have had that, you know, since a couple from my hometown, Boom Boom Mancini, for instance, you know, when guys from your hometown, guys that you can relate to, guys that you said hello and good morning to, and, you know, when you can say, you know, hey, these guys have made it to the Hall of Fame. I mean, you know, that's quite an accomplishment. I was reading something, and you know, as I said, you know, there's a lot of people had their own opinions, and these are just our own opinions. You know, no one is having anything written in stone here, but this was something that I found rather hollow. Maybe during his lifetime, I might not have been so critical, but Ring Magazine has chosen to name Muhammad Ali the Fighter of the Year for 1966. Of course, that was the year that he decided that he wasn't going to be going for the draft. And, you know, now, you know, to me, you know, Ring Magazine doesn't have quite the panache that it used to have. I mean, now, you know, you have MMA and kickboxing. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, to me, it's no longer the Bible of boxing. You know, I think it's kind of watered down. And I've said this before. Jabron, as a fan, what do you think of Ring Magazine finally giving Muhammad Ali the Fight of the Year, 1966 Fight of the Year, so long after his death, and in lieu of, you know, the political climate that we're in now?
I was on mute. I can't speak for other fans, but personally, I feel like, I mean, it's a great thing, but I don't know if are they making up for something, a mistake that they made or something. Like, I want to know what was the purpose of them doing it at this time. That's my thing.
Well, according to this, let's see, the Ring Magazine is making Muhammad Ali 1966 Fight of the Year, a half a century after refusing to give him the award because of his disapproval of the draft. So that was their explanation.
Well, I mean, it's not, I mean, it's great for his name, his legacy, but in this political day and age, I just think it's a bunch of BS. I mean, like, so they saying they believe in what he believe in now, or, you know, that's my whole thing, because he was making a statement about the draft, whereas that was his belief, and the reasoning behind them not making that was because of his belief. So that's my thing. It's like, did they change their mind about their belief and what they felt, or are they just doing it to gain more publicity?
I think it's publicity, man, because with him passing, I think that they feel like, well, you know what, it will make us look good, because people definitely going to look at him sideways like, well, you ain't going to acknowledge the champ, so what better time than now?
Chris, I know I'm old and cantankerous, but, you know, am I just being pessimistic here or what?
No. Not at all. They should have acknowledged him then. They're making up for something. Why now? It's like Jack Johnson. You know, you ship him out of the country. You don't want to come back. And then you, after he dead, now you want to, you know, say
right.
he could be a citizen. So it's, why didn't you do it then? I mean, Ali, greatest athlete ever to fight under through what he was going through. Just like Joe Louis, just like I'm just going with heavyweight, just like Joe Louis, just like Jack Johnson before him, and other black fighters going through all this stuff in that time, and now you recognize him? That's like a slap in the face. He did. He never get to experience it while he was alive. So, you know,
right. You
make it up for something that, you know, you could have did when he was alive, but now you want to do it because, like Lady said, of his death, now he's even realized how big and how great of an athlete he was and how he was boxing, the greatest of all time. You know, so, you know, you make up for it, but it means nothing. In my opinion, it means nothing.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah,
you know,
it's rather empty.
It's pitiful.
Staying with you, Chris, Terrence Crawford, great show last night, dominated John Molina just like we all thought he would. But your observations of Mr. Crawford, you know, and kind of break it down technically for us, if you will.
Well, he's a smart boxer. Very smart. Like, he fought the Russian kid the fight before, and he moved for 12 rounds. Different angles, stop on the drop of a dive, hit him with shots, back moving. Smart game plan, just real intelligent guy. He's a guy that comes out right-handed and then changes it up and fight lefty the whole rest of the fight. I mean, and it seemed like it. People don't even realize what he's doing. Like, you don't train for it. But it's easier said than done, because when you get in the ring, he's just a difficult guy to fight. He keep his range real good, throw good shots, great defense. Intelligent dude. I mean, he's just got better and better each fight, just getting better and becoming a dominant guy at 140. I love to see him fight at 47, because 47 is loaded. A lot of good guys there. I mean, it'll be great. But he's a tremendous fighter. I mean, he the kind of guy that, you know, just keep down, make you almost want to quit. You know, guys don't want to give up, but in the corner they just start thinking, man, this dude's so hard to fight, and he's so good. What do I do against him? And he shuts you down round after round and either stop you or beat you over 12 rounds. But he's just a great fighter. I mean, he's pound for pound up there, and he's getting the credit now, you know, that he's deserved. He got a great following at home, too, and just a tremendous fighter, man. I mean, he's so good.
Can I ask you, cousin, how do you – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, you know, we were talking about, you know, well, Chris had just mentioned about, you know, the crowd that he brings at home. You know, and I mean, he's a good fighter, but the one knock against him, you know, I would say is the fact that he is a very small market fighter. But Layman, you know, does he make it look too easy? Is that the reason why, you know, fans just expect him to win and not necessarily, you know, are enthusiastic about paying for his, you know, a pay-per-view or something of that nature because of, you know, the degree of difficulty that his opponents seem to have, not him.
Well, it's not his fault, man. And if you go back through history, and you have to look at history, basically, you know, there were times when Roy Jones couldn't find nobody to fight worthy, and people start doubting him. But you know, it's not his fault that other fighters are not on his level. It's not his fault that their trainers have failed to take their fighter to the level that they need to be to be able to compete with him, man. So I don't think that he has anything to be down about, other than, hey, you know, this your time to reign, and when it's your time, and you can't worry about what anybody thinks, because at the end of the day, a win is a win. And, you know, that guy he fought, man, Molina, it was in my opinion, it was the sloppiest championship fight that I've ever seen. That guy got hit with shots that he was turned, like, he was spinning around backwards. He was almost throwing backhands. I mean, he was just so sloppy, and I was ashamed to see that type of fight against that type of fighter, against that caliber fighter in Crawford, man. And he, I mean, I'm glad they stopped the fight, because that guy, man, he really, really, really wanted to win, Molina. But I just think that the game plan was just totally, 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 totally wrong, man. He was dependent on that one big punch that could change the fight. And even when he hit Crawford, when he managed to hit him with a good shot, he saw that he was there to win. Because to me, Crawford, he reminds me of like the spirit of Tommy Hearns, man, the Motor City Cobra, and where he turns his opponents, he sets them up. And he's very accurate, man. He's a mean dude when he's in that ring fighting. And I really like to see that, because it just made me remember how I felt when I used to watch fights like Sugar Ray and Tommy Hearns and Roberto Duran. I think that Crawford is a throwback to that, man. So I'm grateful to see boxing reemerging again the way it used to be back in the day when we had great fighters even before me and Chris era. I'm talking about going back to like the Pornell Whitakers, you know, people like that, man. You have very technical fighters. And I was going to ask Chris, who do he think skill-wise is probably the best fighter out there because the Lomachenko guy, he looked really impressive in his last fight, man. And then, you know, this guy, Molina fighting Terrence Crawford, Crawford looked very good, but that guy was so sloppy and all over the place and throwing punches without timing, without being on balance. So I just kind of was wondering, Chris, what do you think style-wise, who you think got the best fighting style out there? Because I'm saying right now, I really like the way that Lomachenko fight, man. I really like the way he moves.
Oh, yeah. For a boxer, slick, great on his feet, kick you at angles, throw combination. He's like the package when it comes to boxing. It's just one thing that, like with Lomachenko, in my opinion, when he fought Salido, couldn't take the pressure. I know Salido is a little bit overweight. I think he weighed like a pound and a half over the limit, but he didn't take the pressure well for 12 rounds. So I think they set up the rematch at 130 and see how he can take the pressure when you're a slick fighter that's so nice with your skill set, and then over 12 rounds, you got to be slick over 12 rounds and doing the same thing you do to, you know, most guys, you got to constantly do it. And Salido put pressure on him and beat him in that fight. And I know it was like his third fight, but he only got like eight fights as it is. So, you know, he's a great fighter, great skill set. I mean, he's so slick, just like Rigondeaux. I mean, is a slick guy, both lefties, good in their feet, can throw combinations, you know, good power for the weight class, and just real good high level, because you know how it is, Layman. You got a high level amateur, and you coming out as a pro, you fight against all these different countries as an amateur, you feel like, hey, these guys can't work with me, especially as you get better as a professional, you know, going through your career and going through, you know, the channels of a prospect to a contender. I mean, to the beginning prospect, contender, and then now you feel like nobody can work with you, especially when you got a skill set like that. Because the kid could just straight out fight. So right now, I think he would be the number one guy in boxing as far as people watching his skills. Like, oh my goodness, look at this. There's other guys out there. I mean, I'm not bypassing, you know, other fighters, but as far as, you know, we're going to go pound for pound as far as skills, you know, the skill set, he probably edged everybody by a little bit. Lomachenko is not.
Hey, you guys, you know, it's a good thing that I'm a premium subscriber because, see, you guys always, you know, make me go over and you start talking about things and then I want to talk a little bit more about it, you know. So, hey, once again, we're going over. And, Chris, this one is your fault because, you know, when you talk about Lomachenko, you know, I understand everything that you're saying about the skill set. He's only had eight fights, but yet and still, you know, he's already a two-time champ. And then you mentioned Mr. Rigondeaux. Now, both of these gentlemen are extremely good at their craft as fighters. But Lomachenko, even at this stage of the game, is able to put butts in seats. Why can't Rigondeaux do
that? Wrong complexion for the protection.
What do you think is the reason why, you know, there's such a big difference between the crowd appeal of Rigondeaux and Lomachenko. You know, I mean, they both bring the same skill set, but one has a more exciting style. Is this a matter of styles making fights, or is this a matter of the fact that you know, we all know what Rigondeaux brings to the table, and you know, even though it's technically sound, it's just not crowd pleasing.
Well, it all depends on what the crowd want. Like, you know, what crowd, and you may listen to the commentators. They may not like it, but then you got the real boxing fans that look at it like, man, you see this kid, he's awesome. So it's actually split down the middle, and you know, that's their opinion, but it's not, you know, everybody's opinion. People look at Rigondeaux, you look at real boxing fans, they're like, man, a great talent. I love watching him fight. I love to see him do his thing. You know, and it's shame on, like, commentators to down boxing when you see a very talented guy boxing and he's not getting hit. And he's trying to, and Rigondeaux trying to please the fans and commentators and anybody else by sitting in the pocket a little bit more and fight you. You know, in certain fights, so it's crazy. You know, I'm a boxing dude. You know, of course, cause I box it, but I'm a boxing fan of boxing, and I sit and watch it. But when I sit out and watch boxing, I don't just sit to see two guys slugging it out and fighting. I like seeing skill. And one thing about boxing, and I know it's about entertainment, and I know it's about, you know, putting butts in seats. But at the same time, it's about leaving this sport with your health intact. All day when you give them a war, but they'll talk about you after your career over because you're slurring, you walking on your heels, you're not in good shape. And now look at it. But he gave you these great fights where a guy like Rigondeaux, who don't get his much, winning fights easy. And then you criticize them. So if you love boxing, love all of boxing. Don't tell me you like boxing and you say, well, this was a boring fight. You're not a boxing fan. You're just a guy that just like want to see two guys slug, and you only want to watch certain fights. But don't say you're a boxing fan when this type of fight come on, you see a great talent, and he wins easy, and then you criticize him.
Let me ask you this, cousin.
Go ahead, Lam.
I was upset because a lot of people were talking trash because Walters quit against who's the guy that Walters? We were just
Lomachenko.
Yeah, against Lomachenko. And I thought he did the right thing as a fighter because I understand, so I would like to hear you kind of sponge upon what you think about that fight. I thought he did the right thing. He knew he was every round he was getting hit more and more and more, so he knew it's better to live and fight another day than to try to prove to the people you tough, because at the end of the day, you know, all people are going to say, oh, you was a tough fighter, but like you said, you're slurring, you got problems, health problems. So what do you think about that, man? Because I was upset with that for a long time because I hated these critics. I'm like, you ain't never been punched in the face. You don't have the right to speak about if a man quit or not.
You don't. You don't know what's going on in the ring, what's going on, you know, certain things in the mind. You like, I'll have a chance to win this fight. And people say, you don't want to quit. So what are you supposed to do, try to run around the ring and not get hit for the rest of the fight and embarrass himself? Yeah, the fight, it's over. I can't win. Exactly. I don't want to end up bad. I have two brothers that's bad. There's five boys in my family. It's eight kids, five boys out of eight. One of my brothers, 52, hasn't worked since he was 27 years old because of the sport. Was a superstar amateur, 10-0 as a pro, messed up. So, you know, we talk about the health of guys and safety after their career. I train boxers. I ask them the first thing. I teach defense. I'm the first thing. Everybody's taught offense. That's boxing. But I teach defense first. I ask them this. When are you going to retire? When you think of retire? They say you're going between 30, 40 years old. Say you retire at 40. You have the rest of your life to live. How are you going to live your life? What kind of quality of life you going to have after this sport? Because nobody cares about you after you're done. The phone calls rarely come in anymore. Promoters don't call you to invite you to fight. Matter of fact, you got world champion at fights and don't even get recognized at fights. That's all they want. A guy's like, oh, the champion's in the house. He don't get recognized. So nobody care about you. So you're going to be a punchy, punch-drunk fighter, beat up, gave it all for the fans and for people to live your life in a wreck. Can't remember nothing, can't speak, can't get a job. No, protect yourself. Nicholas Waters knows what he was doing. He was like, hey, I don't have a chance of winning. And I'm not going to get beat up and leave this sport leave this fight with some kind of injury. Why? You know, I live to fight another day. And certain guys, they don't have that chance to live and fight another day. Either they're corner or they had too much pride or they had too much pride just to take a knee and be like and get counted out. And sometimes you have to quit. You're outgunned. So you quit. You got to give them props. I had memory loss. I had balance problems. I had all this. I just got my hip replaced. I need another hip replacement. I need two shoulder replacements. I got nerve damage in my foot. Injuries from boxing. But I still have my brain intact. So you know, you take those chances. And on my part, I was foolish in fights where I told my father, don't stop the fight. When they should stop the fight, I fought Vladimir Klitschko the first time. The first fight, we went 12 rounds. He battered me big time, and I hung in there. But people were like, oh, man, that was, you showed great heart. But it was foolishness, really. I should have just been like, okay, I'm done. I should have quit. But I wanted to be a warrior in the ring. I got to fight for. I love sports so much. I got to keep fighting. Yeah, but then end up like my brother. Could end up like my brother. Don't have my brain no more. My mom died last year. He went to the wake. My father brought him to the wake the day before. He forgot my mother's funeral was the next day. He didn't go to his old mother's funeral because of boxing. So you this sport is rough. If you've never been hit, you don't really understand. I mean, after sparring, I didn't know where I was. I didn't know who I was. I fought Andrew Galata, Jamil McClain back to back. I told my wife after the fight, I didn't even go to sleep. I didn't want to go to sleep. I told her, if I don't wake up, I'll see you in heaven. I was spinning that bad. Nobody knows. My wife, my father, my mother and father, and my brother. They all know. I was scared to go to sleep. So the sport is dangerous. It's a head sport more than anything. So it's dealing with the brain. So we try to give fans, you know, some good entertainment. And that's why I teach a skill set. Lomachenko, for instance, great skill set. Can beat you with that if people love to see it. So and it's like Floyd Mayweather. People criticize, well, he's bored. He goes 12 rounds. He's smart. Look at his uncle. Put his uncle in nursing home. His father's not doing real good either. So it is because of boxing. So Nicholas Waters, smart man. He didn't just quit because, you know, he was a coward. He just quit. Hey, I can't beat this guy. I ain't gonna get hit no more. Forget that. So that's the reality of the sport. That's the side of the sport that people don't like to talk about because we don't have, like, a commission. NFL do. So it's a big thing. If you watch a movie, Concussion, we go through this all the time. Man, but we can't say nothing because we get banned from the sport. I don't say nothing. Many concussions. I don't say nothing. Because if I go to...
What's that?
LeBron, when you hear, you know, two heavyweight champions and you know, when you see some of, you know, the other champions, not necessarily heavyweight, some of the even lighter weights, when you see, you know, and hear these stories, what is your reaction? I mean, you know, what do you think? What are your feelings here? I mean, you know, you have to have a certain amount of compassion. You know, like you said, usually the only thing we think about these guys are warriors. You know, people that are in the ring for our entertainment. But when you hear the stories from actual people that we talk to and look up to, what is your reaction here?
I mean, I give them the most up respect for what they do, and far as quitting and sitting on your stool and not coming out, things of that sort. I mean, you're the one in there. You're the only person in the ring, and not fans, no one else. So you know your body, and you know your breaking point. Just like having a drink, you know your drinking limit. You know, hey, I need to put this down. If not, I'm going to be sick or end up doing something stupid. So I definitely have the utmost respect for them. And I would like to congratulate and thank the people who was involved last night in the Charlo fight, that they assisted Mr. Williams and made sure that he got the correct medical attention, just taking the correct protocol, because, you know, we don't want him to end up like the case that happened in New York, where they didn't have the correct protocol, following the correct protocol and making sure that the fighter is okay. Did y'all see that devastating knockout? And what was your thoughts on how they handled Mr. Williams?
First of all, you know, before we go to the professionals, remember we had Mr. Executive Director of the California State Athletic Commission, and I can definitely tell you, as far as medical wise, out here in California, that is one of the utmost things. You can't even get the fight started until the ambulance get there and the EMTs are in place and all of that. You know, that's just from, you know, how we see it in the press side. But I'm sure Chris and Layman, both of you have fought out here in California, so you know more. You can kind of speak to that a little more directly than I can. So, Chris, you want to start first as the guest?
Well, as far as the medical in California?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and how they handled the fight last night with Charlo and Williams when he abstained the knockout.
I missed that fight also.
Oh,
I missed that fight. I seen the knockout, a clip of it, but I missed everything else that could go with it. You know, like I said, I tape all the fights and I gotta get around and watch them. It takes me, you know, throughout the week. I watch all the fights over.
You know, but just speaking from personal experience, what is the protocol for knockouts here in California? I know you're suspended for so many days, yada yada. I mean, you know, can you kind of give us the particulars of what happens after you're knocked out, especially here in California?
Well, I personally never fought in California. I know about Las Vegas. I fought in Vegas. I fought in New York City, you know, Connecticut at the casinos, you know, around Germany and stuff. And I know, you know, getting knocked out. I got TKO'd. You know, it's you know, 30 days. You out, knocked out, I guess it's 90 days. I've never been knocked out cold. And, you know, the procedure, I almost, when I went from heavyweight to light heavyweight, I fought and lost Las Vegas. Bad turnout for me. got TKO'd ninth round, and they changed everything, the ruling, because of what happened to me. I almost died, and nobody knew about it. I was in a coma. I mean, they dropped the ball big time. So they changed all the procedures in Vegas, you know, for weigh-ins, because I came in looking like a skeleton, and they passed me, which they shouldn't have, you know. And I was like, okay, you passed me. I was over 38 years old, and everything changed after that because of what happened that night. You know, you got to be – boxing is a serious – it's more dangerous than people think. It's a great sport, but it's a lot of danger involved. And you got to be on top of it on every part of it, every part of the fight, every part of what goes on, because something may happen. I mean, anything can happen. I mean, things can happen. The fight doesn't even look like it's bad, but it could have triggered something that happened in sparring, which is really bad. You know, sparring can be brutal. And then you go to the fight, and then you hit with a certain punch that didn't even seem that bad. And then they say, no, you have some kind of brain injury, or you're in a coma. So they got to stay on top of that. All the procedures got to be on point, because somebody's life is at stake.
Layman, did you ever fight out here in California? I mean, you know, what did you think about, you know, the way things are handled out here by the Athletic Commission?
Well, yeah, Ben, I fought in California a few times, man, and I heard a lot of people, sent a lot of people to the hospital, and, you know, I know it was like, from my understanding, it was like, first, you know, they would get 30 days, and then after that, I think it would go from 30 days to 90 days, and then after that, if you got KO'd, you know, three times in a row, I think they would actually give you a year suspension, and then after that, indefinite. So, you know, I believe that they're doing the best that they can, but like Chris said, you know, in cases where, you know, coming in looking like dehydrated and getting on the scale and passing, I think they have to continue to just up their game, you know, to make sure that these type of things don't slip through the crack, because, you know, it very well could have ended his life, you know, or, you know, some type of brain hemorrhage, or, you know, anything like that could happen. So, you know, I just think that as we continue to evolve as people, I think that the technology evolves. I think the laws evolve. And I think at the end of the day, it's only for the better of everybody, especially if we all voicing these things like tonight. Hey, you know,
Well, let me ask you one thing before you go, before you talk about that, because when we were talking to Andy Foster, one of the things that we were talking about is fighters rehydrating. Do you think that there should be a limit on how much a fighter can rehydrate after the weigh-in, or, you know, being old school like you know, both of you guys are? Should we go back to the same-day weigh-ins?
No, I don't think we should go back. I don't think we should go back to the same-day weigh-ins, and I don't think that it should matter. And it's me talking, okay, I don't think that after a guy weighs in, you know, I think that he should do whatever he feels he needs to do, as long as it's legal, to rehydrate himself, you know, no matter how much weight he puts on for that much, because in a fight, your weight don't necessarily win the fight for you. It's your conditioning. You know, it's your mind. You know, your game plan. That's what wins the fight. You know, I know there are cases that it does make a big difference when you got a guy in the lighter weights that he's outweighed by a guy 14, 15 pounds, where the night before they were the same weight. Maybe that makes a difference, but I'm not in that weight, so I can't really say. But what do you think, Chris?
Well, I think this, and I got a very strong opinion about that. If you come in at the same weight, what does it matter how much weight you put on? I hate hearing a guy say, well, he's a bigger guy. Y'all both weigh 130. Oh, well, sometimes it's to your detriment that you put on too much weight. You may be slower, sluggish. So what about in the cases where when the guy put on a lot more weight and the little guy wins? Only in the case when the guy is a lot bigger where people complain. But they don't complain when the little guy beat the big guy, the so-called big guy, but y'all both weighed in at the same weight. It makes no sense. So you start putting these rules of stuff. When a guy got, if they put up more weight, that means they had to drain to get down to the weight class, most likely. Drain even more. So he's at a bigger risk than the other guy. And then he may be a lot more sluggish because he put on all this weight. Because you eat up and drink up so much and you like, oh, man, I can eat. Now you got to fight and you like, man, I'm so full, I'm sluggish. And this guy is fresh. He know how to put on the right amount of weight after the fight to make him feel good, and he beat the big guy. So it's crazy. I hate hearing commentators say, especially commentators that fought that cut weight, and they say this guy is bigger. They agree with somebody that never fought, and I listen to HBO, and they agree with somebody that never fought, saying, oh, this guy is a much bigger guy. He's like two weight classes bigger. Oh, well. But they both weighed in at the same weight the day before.
Right.
Do it matter? I mean, it's crazy. Now they put these limitations on stuff. You only can gain 10 pounds. I think WBC do it. Only 10 pounds. Only this. I'm like, what? It's crazy. That's ruined it. Who cares how much you wear? That's your fault you put on 25. But look at the kid from Oxnard. He put on 24 pounds after the weigh-in. What's his name? I forgot his name. And
he put on
24 pounds, and got he, the first time he ever got stopped because he was so sloppy after the fight. Nobody say nothing about that.
Wow.
He put on 24 pounds. Brandon Rio, 24 pounds.
Wow.
So they didn't say nothing about his weight, him being 24 pounds the next day on unofficial scale, and then got he got beat in the fight. Actually, he quit. He got stopped. He was like they didn't say nothing about that, but he would have knocked his opponent out. They would have been, oh, well, he's too big. That's it's backwards. You know, that's the perfect example right there.
See, once again, man, you guys opened up an omelet for me, man, and I ain't got time. But I understand everything you're saying, but you know, there's a guy named Canelo that I got a whole lot of problems with about the weight that he comes in and his opposition. But he makes the opponent weight.
That's what counts. And then if he loses, nobody will say nothing about the weight class, about how much weight he puts.
I understand exactly what you're saying because, like you say, you know, then again, you can always go back and talk about a guy like Floyd Mayweather and his opponents, too. So I understand both sides of it.
Yeah.
But having a show, man, you know, you guys just give me a whole lot of fodder, man. I could just talk for hours. You know, so, yeah, you know, we're definitely going to have to continue this conversation and then, you know, hey, I might make a 2-hour show for us just to talk about these different things. But it's almost time for us to get out of here. A couple little things I want to talk about before we get out of here. You mentioned Charlo last night the knockout of J-Rock. Charlo moving up to 160. Jabron, your thoughts first.
I think it'll be a great move for him to move to 160. Last night he showed me something. He made me eat crow because one of my biggest criticism on him was the simple fact that he liked to rely on his power, just looking for a big shot. Well, last night he switched it up. He threw the uppercut. He was going to the body. Like he was very versatile with his arsenal with his attack. And it would be a great new face in the 160 division, especially when you got Mr. Cinnamon supposedly moving to 160. So we can add some more excitement and drama in that division. And great fight. I think J-Rock should bounce back. And that's my take on that fight. And fight of the year candidate we'll touch on next week, the Dillian White fight. Can't leave that.
Go ahead, Blaine.
I just want to give a shout out to my boy Ray Beltran that fought last night on the undercard. I just want to just congratulate him on winning
his
fight against. Yeah, man, and you know, I came up watching him in the gym, you know, before I would train, me and James Toney and Michael Moore and Francois Botha and Jeremy Williams. We would train from 12 to 2 at Wild Card, but he would train from 10 to 12 along with Manny Pacquiao. So just to see him, you know, especially at his age, in there against these younger guys and handling himself, man, I just wanted to just give him a shout out. Congratulations.
Yeah. I like Raymond myself. I think I still got one of his T-shirts from his car wash. He was one of the guys that kind of gave me an interview when I first started off in the business too. So, yeah, big ups to Raymond. Mr. Bird. We would love to have you back next week if you have time to continue some of these conversations. I do have your number. I'd like to hopefully I can get in touch with you and we can talk a little boxing, get you on some of our different shows. I know you're busy and whatnot, but being right here in San Diego, we're going to have to hook up one day. I usually end up having a lunch at least once a month with Pat Russell. So, maybe we can include you or we can meet up someday. But anyway, for
Definitely
tonight, thank you so much for coming on the show. And tell anybody and everybody where they can find you on social media, any stories or fighters you might be training that you want us to know of, give us your final thoughts for the evening. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. You talking to me?
Okay.
I'm training, a couple guys, Joel Jr., 23-0, one of the highest prospects in boxing. Great kid on his way. Look out for him. 2017, every household going to know him. I know Ring Magazine said he was the next Arturo Gatti. I was like, okay, I hope you get Arturo publicity, the following, the backing. I'm going to teach you defense, a lot more defense, though, and not take enough away from Arturo Gatti. Great fighter, proud season guy, but just training guys, and 2017 going to be, a big year with the champs. What Layman was talking about, the five champs is Layman Brewster, myself, Ray Mercer, James Toney, Riddick Bowe. And you're going to see us on a lot of buzz around all of us being together, especially Cigar Line that's coming out and other projects. And I'm just, appreciative to be on your show. Honestly, it was great talking boxing with boxing mind. It's a great thing. So thank you very much for it.
Oh, hey, we appreciate your time, champ. And like I said, hopefully you can become part of our family. You know, we also have Iceman Scully. He drops by occasionally. So, you know, we're just a little kind of boxing family here on Sunday. And we try to schedule our show for an hour, but sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But thank you so much. And like I said, I'll be in touch. And, you know, you're speaking of your fighter. You know, we could get him on the Pugilist Corner, which is on every Tuesday. And, hey, we like to talk to the prospects and, you know, trainers, cut men, all of that. So we try to keep our show real, and we try to talk about things that are relevant. So we hope, as I said, you'll become part of our family. Speaking of family, you know, kudos. Thank you very much for bringing part of your family on with us to talk boxing this Sunday. Champ, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you? And, hey, by the way, man, when you going to bring them boys over to Ohio so we can whip up on them?
Ha-ha! Well, just so you know, man, I'm just waiting. I'm waiting on the gentleman that I have asked to step up by the name of David Rock. He has a promotional company called Cold Stance, and just trying to wait till he tell me the green light, and then I can really start pushing it. You know, I'm trying to get the best fighters I can possibly manage to get, because I know going against Ohio boxing is going to be an uphill battle. It ain't nothing that I know is going to be easy, but you know, I ain't never had nothing easy, so I wouldn't expect nothing else different, you know. But I think that, you know, as they say, steel, those are iron sharpens iron and sharpens man, like that. So, you know, I'm going to bring the best I can, and I'm going to try to motivate these guys to kick some butt, man, and talk trash and have a good time at the end of the day, you know.
Don't bring them to Michigan, though.
We coming. I already told you. After we fight, after me and Buster, Buster gonna get his 12 from Ohio. I'm gonna get my 12 from Indiana. We gonna combine the teams, and we gonna come and we gonna take on you and James, Tony.
Yeah, I know. Ohio and Indiana gotta take on Michigan, because y'all can't handle the Michigan fighters.
We're gonna do
the same thing to the Michigan fighters that we did to the Michigan football team. Ain't no sweat. Don't worry about it.
We're gonna try to get North Carolina where Ray is, and since Bo was out of bed style, we're gonna try to get the best 12 from New York and the best 12 from North Carolina, and then we're going to combine them two, and then, you know, the three of our states are going to go, the winners from the three states between Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana, we're going to go and then take on the winners between North Carolina and New York. So, you know, we just want to keep it going, man. You know, we want to fund this thing. Like I said, we're going to use our cigar sales and the various other avenues and even donations, you know, because at the end of the day, it's about giving people an opportunity to get exposure. And a lot of these kids won't get that exposure because there's a lot of politics sometimes involved in just trying to go to these national tournaments. But to walk to the ring with the heavyweight and Chris Bird, to walk to the ring with the a guy like Riddick Bowe, or, you know what I mean? So I think that will be a good inspiration, because we know all of them ain't going to be world champions, but at the same time, we're trying to show them another side of life, man, you know, that people like us who have reached the highest plateau in boxing, that we care and we're trying to give back. So that's why we're donating our time and our efforts and our energy trying to make this happen.
Believe me, we appreciate it. And, Jabron, you know, Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media, anything that's happening up there in Brooklyn before we let you go, my man?
Just thank you, JK, and thank our guests, champ, both of the champs, and great action this weekend, and looking forward to another great week in the boxing industry. And you can find me on Facebook. That's Jabron, J-A-B-R-A-N, Clemon, C-L-E-M-O-N. Thanks once again, and throw it back to you, JK.
All right, well, hey, you can find me on Twitter at West Coast Steelers Fan if you want to talk boxing. We also have our presence on Facebook, the Pugilist Corner. This weekend, this Tuesday, we will have Mr. Ronnie Shields. He'll be on talking about his fighter. We'll also have two of the young men from the prelims of those fights, Mr. Mario Barrios and Edrickson Lubin, who also scored knockouts on that card. And either Steve Smoger or Jack Reese, I'm not sure which referee will be stopping by, but we'll also have some great guests Tuesday. So looking forward to talking to everyone Tuesday. Love to thank our guest, Mr. Chris Bird, also Layman, and hey, my co-host, Mr. Jabron Clemens. So have a great night, everyone. We'll see you next week. Ooh.